What's up, everybody? Welcome to evolutionary.org Raw podcast. This is your host, Steve Smee. I am joined with your favorite Mason, the Mason himself, Masonic Bodybuilder. We have six great topics ahead of this in the show today, all topics that you have wrote in or posted on the forums. So let's get right to it. Let's talk some hardcore Raw information. Let's head it your way right now. First one is all about running a trend cycle. This is a guy who wrote in. He wants to know how he can run a trend cycle. Now, Matt, you just ran a trend cycle. Tell me a little bit about that. What is some advice you can give him, and how did you run it to succeed?
Well, I'll tell you, mentally, you have to be prepared because this shit is hardcore. This is the ultimate steroid. This is the one when you've been doing this for years and you know, you get stuck, you're looking for something new. This is when you pull this out. This is the nuclear option, guys. Okay? So with something this intense going to bring results, there's also going to be a lot of side effects. So this is where I say you need to be ready. So if you're thinking of running this, just as a guideline, you probably want to have a good five cycles that you've ran properly. You want to be able to know what you're doing and plan this shit out right, because you will have issues if you don't know what you're doing. You'll have a ton of issues, okay? So the first thing I would say is keep your dose moderate. You don't need to go crazy with this. If you do, you won't sleep, okay? So 300 milligrams per week, even less, 200 to 300 is probably a good range for most of you guys. That's what you want to start off with. Test, we've gone back and forth, Steve and I, on this one. You can go zero. You could go, you know, a TRT dose, say 200. I ran 500 when I did mine. So that's kind of something that we can debate back and forth on how to do it. But if it's your first time using it, I would either run the test zero or low, because you want to know what the trend's doing, okay? So I ran long esters because I prefer them. I prefer to pin less often. It's kind of, you hear it on the forums a lot. Guys always say, oh, you know, run trend ace first. And I guess the thought behind that is, you know, if you do get the side effects and you don't like it and you want to stop, it gets out of your system quicker. Where if you run the trend E, it's going to be in your system for, you know, quite a few weeks, and you're just going to have to ride it out. So I chose not to do that. Doing this stuff a long time, I got a good feel for my body. I know kind of what side effects to deal with. So I guess let's start with the benefits then. So the first thing you'll notice is your strength will go through the roof. It is, for what I've used, the most potent for increasing strength gains, and it happens quick. Okay, that's the first thing. And you'll hit records on pretty much all your lifts. You obviously got to train and eat properly, but this is what it's going to do. The second thing is with your eating, it will partition carbs like crazy. So unless you're abusing it and you've used it 100 times, you'll be able to get away with eating a little more carbs, a little more food, and you'll still be nice and hard and chiseled. It's not going to, you know, sit there like it would on, you know, a wet compound. Trend doesn't aromatize, so it's going to be nice and dry for you. Now, I will say another debate is, can you bulk on trend? Now, some guys will say, you know, it bothers my tummy, I can't eat. You know what? If you're using trend and you're not eating and taking advantage of it, I think you're silly, because you can bulk like crazy. With this compound, you can add some serious size. Your strength will be crazy. The food just gets shoved right to the muscles. It's a perfect compound for bulking. You just got to do it right. You just got to be ready to eat and have your meals planned out, and you got to have this shit ready to go. This is why it's for a more experienced user, right? You don't want to take this and then not take advantage of it. So that's just a basic idea of what you get out of it. Before we go to the side effects, Steve, you got anything to add on the benefits?
In my experience, guys, and we talked about this on a previous podcast, I hit my all-time PRs on both mass, weight, and strength when I was using a cycle with trend. And it was just trend and like an oral. It wasn't like test, trend, EQ, master on, all the, you know, like four or five compounds like you see guys saying. Trend is so strong that you just use it by itself. The strength that it gave me made me so fucking strong. I mean, I'm not a tall guy. I'm about your height, Matt. I'm about 5'6", 5'7", you know, 5'7 and a half on a good day. And let me tell you something. I mean, my weight got up to 200 pounds on trend, but I was also benching over 400. And that's a lot of weight. I was squatting, no joke, 600. I was cleaning 250. I mean, it was ridiculous, the strength I had. I was curling like 80-pound dumbbells, like no problem. Before we get into side effects, let me tell you something. Injuries. If you want to get injured, Trend is a good option for you, because I ended up getting injured on Trend. I was benching and doing such heavy bench presses, militaries, incline. I mean, I was doing over two plates on militaries, which is so much pressure on your shoulders. It became so much of pressure, I ended up actually tearing my rotator cuff 2.5 years ago. And I didn't even know it was torn. It took me like a year and a half to, you know, finally go to a doctor, get an MRI done to confirm it. I mean, I kind of figured it out after a year. I knew something was wrong. My arm had no strength to it when I was benching, and I was like, whoa, something is wrong here. Well, it was thanks to Trend that I ended up blowing my rotator cuff. So it's something you need to realize. A lot of you guys who don't have have a lot of room to get stronger, you're going to open yourself up to injuries. Or guys who are training for strength, like I was, you know, if you let Trend basically, if you don't pace yourself on Trend and you start just lifting heavy and lifting like a gorilla in the gym, you can end up injured. So I really hope you guys take that advice, because once you get a rotator cuff tear, guys, we're not in the NFL, we're not Cam Newton, we're not Drew Brees, we don't have $1 million doctors who can basically give us a surgery and then, 6 months later we're throwing a football again, okay? At our point in our lives, the medical access we have access to an average doctors, whatever, having surgery and recovering is not an option for you. If you do have these types of injuries, you're going to be told by your doctor and your physical therapist that you're not going to be able to lift heavy for the foreseeable future. So that's where I am now. So just be careful with that. Side effects. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think part of that strength too is it's almost a side effect of another side effect. And that's the aggression that you can get, because it is such an extremely androgenic compound. When you're in the gym, you want to kill it, right? Mentally, you want to just crush it. You're not in there like on just a regular day, like when you're not on anything, right? This is, you get in there and your mindset is, yes, I'm going to pick up those 80-pound dumbbells and I'm going to curl them and I'm going to make it look easy. So it's almost a matter, you got to control your mind a little bit too, because you know the strength is there. You know you can do it, right? So yeah, let's get into those side effects.
Yeah, as an androgenic compound, on paper, Trend is 5 times more androgenic and anabolic than regular testosterone, which has a 1-to-1 ratio. Trend has a 500 ratio versus 100-to-100 ratio of testosterone. Now, those numbers on paper, guys, don't always translate to real life. I mean, Halo is 18 times more androgenic than testosterone, but doesn't mean you're going to get 18 times as strong. You see what I'm saying? So it doesn't necessarily mean much, but in Trent's case, I believe it. Now, when you're taking something like this, it's going to turn you more insulin resistant, especially the more you abuse it. A lot of you younger guys may not notice it, but once you get older, your body will start getting more insulin resistant. Trend basically increases the situation. In Matt's case, as he continues to run it in subsequent cycles, he'll notice this. What's going to happen is you may start noticing you feel a little lightheaded, a little nauseous sometimes, especially when you wake up in the morning because you have not eaten for 7 or 8 hours, right? So you want to make sure on train it's a good idea to have carbs as soon as you get up. Spread carbs out. If you're gonna do a lot of exercise, your workouts, you want to time your carbs so you have that, so your body can burn it. Because remember, train is a great nutrition partitioner, so it's gonna suck all those carbs right out of your muscles. All those glycogen stores gonna suck them out. If you do a lot of cardio, your cardio is gonna be destroyed on train. Guys who do a lot of cardio, you see them eating bananas before a run, you see them during the runs, they'll have a cookie. During a half marathon, they actually have cookies every mile for you to snack on. There's a reason for that, is because you're basically leaking all that glycogen out of your system. Well, Trent makes it worse. So if you're an endurance athlete or you like to do a lot of cardio, Trent is not going to work for you. How do we counteract cardio issues on Trent? Carring GW is going to help you counteract it, but it's not going to counteract it all the way, but it will a lot. I'd say 50% of the way. How do you counteract feeling lightheaded and nauseous and, you know, that sort of thing? Spreading carbs. So use carbs as a weapon. Use the carring as a weapon. In terms of heart issues, anything androgenic is going to strain the shit out of your heart, strain your cholesterol levels. Your blood pressure is going to go sky high. How do we counteract that? Number one, you're going to go into cycle already in top shape. If you can't even run a mile in like 7 or 8 minutes, then you're probably not in good enough shape to be running trend. If you're out of shape, you have high body fat, if you don't eat good, if you don't already exercise, you're not in good enough shape. It's going to send your cholesterol level sky high, your blood pressure sky high. Even if you are in good shape, it's going to send shit sky high. So I recommend running N2Guard, a support supplement, something like N2Guard that has those ingredients that are going to help you. Matt, what worked with you?
Yep, definitely. I ran all that with my cycle. The thing that you have to remember is the androgenic piece, right? Tren is so androgenic that all the typical side effects you would get from like a testosterone cycle, you're going to get, but they're going to be a lot worse. So that blood pressure increase, the cholesterol being jacked up, what you would normally see, just be prepared that it's going to be worse. You know, blood work is still good because you still want to know, but just, you know, mentally you got to be ready. The other thing, the side effect to be aware of, it for me, it's not an issue because I think primarily it's genetic. Secondarily, it's, you know, has to do with the compound, but that's hair loss. Tren is one of the worst for hair loss. So if you are prone to male pattern baldness, it's probably something, if you're going to run it, then you deal with it, or you just run it at a lower dose. I would never run something like finasteride because it will just destroy you. What it does is it blocks DHT. DHT is our sex hormone. So by doing that, you could end up with ED issues, like your libido could just be destroyed to nothing. So I wouldn't try to use something like that just to counteract it. I would either not use Tren or I would run it at a lower dose. The other thing, too, is, and I found this, and actually Steve warned me of this beforehand, was I planned for 12 weeks, and I know some of you guys plan to run this shit for 16 weeks. Be prepared that you may get tired of it. It doesn't sound like it with all the strength benefits and like you feel crazy strong, you feel great. But, you know, after 8 weeks, you might just be done, right? So for me, it was being hot. Okay, that's a side effect that a lot of you guys will deal with. I think pretty much everybody gets this. If you run it in the summertime, it's a terrible idea, because it's going to make you hot all the time anyways. So what you want to do is run it when it's cooler outside, if you're in an area where it gets cold in, you know, the fall, winter, whatever. That's the first part. The second part of being hot is the sleeping. Okay, so I would wake up at, you know, 2 or 3 in the morning, whatever time, just pouring sweat, right? It's terrible. And then it's hard to get back to sleep. So the insomnia, that's a big one. Sleep is so important for recovery that it's something that it really is hard to deal with. I know Steve's got a couple tricks to fight that and what to do in the middle of the night, but I know you will be changing your sheets more, and you'll be changing your pillowcases, you'll be washing that stuff. And because of that, you definitely want to be showering more, be aware of your hygiene, because all that sweat, all those oils are just on your body a lot more. Like, you want to keep the acne away as much as you can. So you got to, like, just use common sense. You're dirty and sweaty all the time and a lot more. Like, you clean yourself.
Yeah, a good trick at night to fight the insomnia is, again, spreading your carbs, having carbs before bed with your meal. Don't go to bed on an empty stomach. Have maybe some apple juice. Keep some frozen pancakes in the fridge. It's a really good trick that I used to implement. Some frozen pancakes and some honey. If you wake up in the middle of the night and you're like, shit, you know, you start shaky, you feel shaky, you feel like those low blood sugar symptoms, you know, go pop in a couple pancakes into the microwave. They have those frozen pancakes that you can pop in the microwave. Put some honey on it. Eat those. You'll feel better. You know, and then you can try going back to sleep. You should be fine. Maybe take a cold shower. That's another thing I used to do. So, you know, those are a couple options for you. Another problem with trend that goes with that is hydration. I feel like when I'm deep into a trend cycle, I can never hydrate. No matter how much I drink, I can't hydrate. If you go outside and you start sweating, it is horrible. You can never hydrate back. So a good trick for that is learn to, you know, mix your own hydrating drink. I like the little coconut water, the pure coconut water, guys, not the shitty coconut water you buy from the supermarket. You gotta go to the whole health food store, buy pure coconut water that just has coconut water. No sugars, just pure coconut water, okay? And then you're gonna add magnesium supplement, and you're gonna add some salt, some iodized sea salt to that drink, a lot of water, and a greens powder, a good quality greens powder, which you can get also from a health food store. And then mix that up and drink it, and that's going to help. That's going to give you the potassium, magnesium, salts that you need to rehydrate, and it really works. Also, watermelon hydrates really, really well. So this is a lot of good tips on how to run trend. But how do you run a trend cycle now, knowing all this, knowing all the ancillaries you need and whatever you need? A trend cycle that I recommend would be a simple 250 milligrams a week of trend. You know, you can plan for 8 weeks, but if you have to stop a couple weeks earlier, that's fine. You know, no need to just keep going. If it sucks, no need to keep going. And you can stack either Anavar or T-Bol with it. Those are both mild compounds. They bind to SHBG. They don't add to side effects. So that would be my cycle, you know, 50 milligrams of VAR or 30 to 40 milligrams of T-Bol with 250 milligrams of trend. How about you, Matt? What's your perfect trend cycle that you would recommend?
Yeah, that sounds really good, actually. I always like to run tests. I don't know. Maybe I'm just scared. I'm just one of those guys. But I would keep it low. I don't think you need the 500 plus. I know a lot of you guys like to run it super high. I don't think that's necessary. You'll get all the androgenic kick that you need from trend. So I think, like I said, that 200 to 300 milligrams per week. I planned mine with the long ester for 12 weeks, but I ended up stopping it early. Just so, like I said, just be prepared. I think if you are going to run a long ester, orals can be great. As long as you're running your N2 guard for your liver, you want to keep that safe, right? And especially when you're running it with something like trend that's already harsh. So that becomes even more important. I think T-Ball is a good option. Like Steve said, Anavar is a good option because they're both mild. What I wouldn't do, I wouldn't stack Winnie in there because Winnie is bad on the hairline just like trend is. You put those two together and you're definitely going to have some issues. So I would stay away from something like that. I would stay away from D-Ball, something that's extremely wet. Trend's dry, so I wouldn't want to toss in, you know, like a wet D-Ball and just cover that up and bloat up and, you know, have to run an AI super high just to combat that. So that's kind of how I would lay it out. The one thing we forgot to mention, because this is another myth that gets thrown in here, and Steve explains this really well, is in our cycles, neither one of us said you have to run CABR every day. And a lot of guys think you get gyno and that prolactin levels go up on trend and high prolactin levels will cause gyno. So, Steve, I'll let you touch on that quick, and then we can move on to our next one.
Well, in all my years on forums, guys, a decade, I've only seen this, you know, a handful of times where guys get you can't get gyno from prolactin, and that's what tren basically metabolizes to prolactin in the body, but you can't get gyno from prolactin. You can get lactating breasts from prolactin. So if you abuse the shit out of tren, you run a crazy dosage for like 6 months or a year straight, that is possible. So in that situation, yeah, you're going to need to run the Dosinex. Otherwise, you don't need the Dosinex, guys. When you run tren, I mean, that's just, you know, going... That, it's good to have it on hand. It's good to use it every once in a while for your libido and your sex drive, but you don't need it. You're not going to run tren and have libido problems or have high prolactin levels. Prolactin levels fluctuate wildly throughout the day. So you could run prolactin at 8 o'clock, have sex, run prolactin again, and it's going to be a totally different number. So that's a little bit of a myth there. You're not going to get gyno from prolactin. You get gyno from people stacking 500-600 milligrams of test with their tren, and then they complain that it was the fucking tren that did it when it was the fucking testosterone that did it. It's the estrogen. Estrogen causes gyno. Prolactin will cause lactation. That's not the same thing. So we go from an androgenic compound now to an anabolic compound, all about running a DECA cycle. Decadurobolin is a nandrolone, and nandrolones are very mild. They do bind to DHT receptors in the body. So instead of what tren does, metabolizing into DHT, destroying your hairline, like what Matt was saying, DECA actually doesn't metabolize into DHT. It binds to DHT, so it drops DHT in the body. So it's very good for your hairline. It's very mild. It doesn't cause androgenic side effects. So with DECA, what you want to do when you're running DECA, this is the best tip that no one will tell you on other forums, and this is a tip that I learned about a couple years ago, and I've been trying to share it as much as I can, is that you should always run a DHT derivative with DECA, but run a mild DHT derivative. Instead of running Winstrol with it, which kind of, you know, hurts the purpose of running DECA in the first place, run Proviron, which is a very low side effect DHT derivative, and that will actually counteract those DHT, low DHT symptoms of libido problems in DECA dick. DECA dick is actually erectile dysfunction, okay? And what will happen is you'll run the DECA, and then you won't be able to get your dick up, either in cycle at some point or after cycle. And that's because you're basically, when you're running that DECA, you're dropping your DHT levels in your body. That is our sex hormone. That is what gave us penises as children. So you want to basically run that Proviron to counteract it. That is the best tip you're ever going to get. It is very, very important with DECA. Now, what does DECA do for you? It's a mild compound. It's going to give you great appetite increase. It's going to increase your mood. In my experience, that's what it did. And, you know, it's a great compound. You can stack a lot of DECA into a cycle because it doesn't come with side effects, you see? So that's the beauty part about using DECA. As long as you use it properly, you'll get very little side effects. Back in the old days, the 70s, the 80s, guys used to run DECA by itself with some Proviron. And the reason they would do that is DECA aromatizes a fifth as much as testosterone. So they didn't get those wet, you know, side effects, those aromatizing side effects of the estrogen increase. So the water retention, the bloat, you know, all that stuff, the gyno and stuff like that. So if you run DECA properly, you should not have any of these, you know, DECA dick problems or side effects problems. So the guy who's asking how to run a DECA cycle properly, this is what I would tell you. I'd run 400-500 milligrams a week of DECA, and then I'd run 200 milligrams a week of testosterone just to give it a little bit of an androgenic kick. And then I'd run Proviron, 25 to 50 milligrams a day to counteract those DHT side effects. And then I'd be running a light AI. You need to basically play around with your AI dose. I recommend Aromacin. And then you're going to run your support supplements. You know, the N2 Guard, the Cardarine is always a good idea to run with it. So that's how I would run a DECA cycle. Matt, what are your thoughts on DECA?
Yeah, that's a great cycle layout. I think you guys might be wondering with the Proviron, if I just need to run a DHT, can I run Anavar? You could, but here's the thing. The beauty with Proviron is it's not liver toxic, so you can run it the whole cycle. If you're running DECA, you're probably going to be running it like 14 weeks. You know, it is a really long ester. So you don't want to be running something like Anavar that is liver toxic, even though it's mild. You don't want to be running that for 14 weeks. You'll destroy your liver. So that's where the Proviron really makes sense to run. DECA, for some reason, it seems like it's not as popular anymore. Guys are afraid of it, somewhat because of the DECA dick, and some because guys just have this idea that they're going to use DECA and they're going to look like a blown-up water buffalo. Like, that's not what happens. It doesn't aromatize like you guys think. It doesn't aromatize anywhere near what Test does. What happens is a lot of guys like to combine DECA with Test and D-Ball. And yeah, when you combine those three together, it's going to be pretty wet. So even if you run a proper AI, you're still going to have water retention. So everybody wants to blame the DECA in that case when DECA is the least of the culprits, right? D-Ball is the worst for aromatizing. Now, that's a good bulking cycle, but, you know, that is a side effect you would have. The water would be crazy. So I think, you know, I think DECA is going to come around, and I think it's going to become a lot more popular again as guys are more educated and they learn, you know, you can run it with something like a low dose of Test, and you can actually keep the water, you know, really, really down. Like, you can actually make some really lean gains. You'll get some good size. You'll get some good strength. Like Steve said, you'll feel really good. It's great for the mood. Another thing is it'll make your joints feel really, really good. So as you're getting to heavier weight and as you're, you know, you're getting sore and that kind of thing, DECA is really good for kind of making that feel better. It's not going to heal, you know, something that's torn in your knee. It's not going to heal a tendon that's ripped. It's not going to heal a ligament problem. So you want to be careful if you do have an injury that you're not going to, you know, run the DECA, feel good, go super heavy, and then blow your knee out or, you know, blow out your shoulder because you feel good. So I would be careful if you do have a pre-existing injury to get that taken care of first. If you don't have injuries, DECA can be great for that purpose. I know guys that get older that, you know, are in their 40s and 50s that are on TRT and don't have any injuries, but they'll run DECA like 100 milligrams a week as part of their TRT, and it basically keeps their joints feeling young. You know, they're able to lift, and they don't get any of that soreness. It's just something that helps out. They're not using it to heal. They're just using it as kind of, you know, something to go along with it. So that's another purpose. It really is a nice compound to run. So you can pretty well stack it with anything, you know, like, Steve, I know you plan to run DECA and Tren at some point.
Yeah,
down
I was
going to
bring this up.
The stack I mentioned
earlier, okay, the low-dose Test, 600-milligram DECA, and then the Proviron, that's for a beginner. But if you're experienced, you have a lot of cycles on your belt. I mean, a lot of cycles. And you have a lot of years on your belt, and you're, you know, experience both with weight training and with using steroids. Okay, this is not for someone in their 20s. You don't need this stack yet. Okay, you don't need this stack. But if you're an older guy, you're in your 30s and 40s, this is the stack that's going to blow you away. And that is the DECA Tren stack. And the reason it works in such good synergy, if you ask this on the forums, they will trash you on any of these fucking forums, because all these guys will be like, what, you're running Tren and DECA? Those are the two worst steroids. Blah, blah, blah. You're an idiot for running that. It's actually the best fucking stack you could come up with. Think about it. You're running an androgen with an anabolic. Okay, that's a yin and yang. Okay, you get the best of both worlds. All right, that's like a fucking porterhouse steak. Okay, you're getting the best of both worlds. Also, the DECA doesn't come with side effects. It's mild. It doesn't destroy your heart health. Doesn't come with those androgenic side effects. So it's very, very mild. And then the Tren is the opposite. The Tren is the very aggressive, androgenic, destroys your heart stack. So run a low dose of Tren and a high dose of DECA together, and you will have a beautiful
beautiful synergy, and they work so well together because you have, you know, the best of both worlds running
it,
and you'll have no issues. And I'd run some Proviron with it. You always want to Proviron with DECA. Absolutely. Always run Proviron with DECA, and you want to monitor your estrogen levels because the DECA still aromatizes into estrogen. So I would run a light dose of aromas, and maybe 5 milligrams every second or third day, and see if that works with your blood. What were you saying?
Yeah, just another, because we were about to get into it on Tren. I just touched on it, and then I left it alone, was Tren can cause stomach pain for some people. Basically, it's not good on your gut flora. It can kill your gut flora. So it's a good idea to run a probiotic with Tren. What it can do when that happens is it can just kind of hurt your appetite a little bit. So what Steve's saying with DECA and Tren together, the synergy, this is another example of where that comes into play. If you are sensitive to that, and I, like, personally, I didn't have any of that. I had no problem eating on Tren. But if you do, the one thing DECA, a side effect of DECA, is it will increase your appetite significantly. Okay, you should always be hungry, which is why it's great to run when you're bulking. So if you are that person that's having issues with Tren on your stomach, run your probiotic, and with the DECA, it'll counteract that, so you'll be able to eat. So that's just another example of how they go really well together.
Yeah, I mean, we covered it beautifully in this podcast, guys. This podcast so far is like gold. I mean, I hope you guys keep this if you're going to run either one. These are some great tips that you're getting, guys. Our next topic, someone wants to know, Tony writes in, Tony from, looks like from Brooklyn. He says his friend comes to the gym with a gym bag, he's got a belt, he's got straps, he's got wraps, and my friend wants me to start, you know, says I should buy all of them because you really need them in the gym, and, you know, should I be using all these? Because I've always heard, you know, lifting raw is the best. So Matt, you know, tell us a little bit about that. Do you use any of that shit?
I don't, and I'll tell you the first thing to look for. When you look at a belt, what's the first thing you see? It's that brand name on there, right? All these supplement companies, all these guys on YouTube are selling these belts. So, of course, they're going to promote that you need to use a belt. Of course, they're going to wear that belt when they lift in their videos, right? This is all about making money. Do you want a belt when you're doing your deadlifts and squats? No, you don't want a belt because it's going to weaken your core, okay? You want your body to progress at the same time, okay? You don't want your back getting stronger, but then your core not getting stronger, and then you're using straps, so then your wrists and your forearms are weak, so you have no grip, so your body's all over the place, right? It's not able to keep up. All these things that you use, yes, you will be able to lift heavier weight. If you're going to deadlift and you're going to use wrist straps, yes, it takes the pressure off of your grip, and you will be able to lift more. But long term, you would be so reliant on these straps to even be able to perform the exercise. You'll never be able to catch up because lifting raw is what's going to build the strength that you're going to be able to grip the weight with, or that your core is going to be able to build up when you're squatting, so you're going to be able to go heavier and you're going to just keep going that way. Same thing with gloves. Right? It's going to take a lot of that out of your hands. You want to grip the weight, okay? If you're getting calluses on your hands, good, okay? They should be there. Those are trophies, okay? Look at them as trophies. That'll actually help you grip the weight better. Your body's doing that for a reason. It's building them up there because it will help you, okay? So for me, I would never recommend using those things. You see these guys that are wrapped up from head to toe like mummies, right? It's ridiculous. Guy's on a leg press and he's got his knees wrapped up. Okay, if you need to do this, you need someone to watch you and help you with your form. Because if you're having pain or you're not able to lift heavy, you know, like you think you should, you're not progressing, something's wrong with what you're doing. And it just takes having somebody help you out. Watch some videos, you know, figure out your form. I know just a quick example for me on squats. I got to a point where I was stuck. Well, what I noticed was I was always doing the same stance, okay? I squat low right to the ground, but I was always doing the same stance. So I was missing out on a couple of the different muscles on like the inside of my leg. So I was going to a more narrow stance and then doing a wide stance. Like I was, you know, doing all different things to catch up. And then sure as shit, you know, you get stronger. But what I didn't do was I didn't start using a belt. Okay. So I would advise this guy, you know what? You're right. Don't listen to your buddy. You're right when you think lifting raw is the best. And I would, you know, tell your buddy the same thing. Like, hopefully he doesn't rely on these things too much because he's going to end up getting stuck.
Let me tell you something, Matt. I used a belt when I was really, really young as a teenager. I'm not really sure why I started using it. I guess because they were available in my gym, and a lot of the football players and stuff that were older, you know, I started lifting weights when I was 15 or 16. A lot of the seniors and stuff, some of them would use the belt. They throw a belt on. They were available in our weight room. But I used it for like a year on some of my heavier lifts, and then I stopped. I started noticing my core didn't seem to be getting stronger. So I stopped using it, and I swear I actually got stronger when I stopped using it. I haven't used one since. In terms of wearing a glove, I wore gloves for probably like 2 years as a weightlifter in my 20s. And after like a year and a half, I started noticing like pain in my forearms. And, you know, I started asking people, you know, what should I do? And they'd give you all kinds of advice. But one guy gave me a really good tip. He told me, he kind of explained it to me. He said, look, you're wearing gloves. And like you said, Matt, when you're gripping stuff, you're actually, if you put your palm open right now and then squeeze it, you'll notice your forearms contract. Well, when you're wearing gloves and you're grabbing that weight, you're increasing your grip because of the glove, so it's like cheating. So then when you take the glove off and then try to do the same thing, you're gonna notice you're not gonna be able to grip as well. And then so I stopped using the gloves, and by God, after a couple months, my forearms, the pain was gone. So thankfully I got really good advice on that. So I'm gonna tell you guys the same advice. The gloves, the straps, the wraps, the belts, if you're gonna use them, you know, use them less than 5% of the time you're lifting. Because if you use them all the time, you're going to fuck yourself. You're going to fuck yourself in the end. All right? Now, someone told me one time, he's like, well, I have to wear gloves and I have to wear straps when I'm doing deadlifts. Otherwise, the bar slips and I can't hold it. Well, I told him, I'm like, that makes sense, you know, because you're using these tools to help you grip that bar when you're doing a deadlift. They're actually weakening your forearms, your wrists, your hands, in the process. So stop using it. Start lifting raw when you do those deadlifts, and your body will adjust to it. Your hands will get stronger. Your wrists will get stronger. Your forearms will get stronger. When you use all these cheats, you're going to develop imbalances. Why was my forearm hurting? Because it was my arm was getting imbalanced. So if you, over time, want to, you know, not get imbalances and not get injuries and not start having pain, you want to basically be raw. You know, and I see these guys, these older guys sometimes, they wrap themselves up like what Matt was saying. They look like King Tut. They're taking anti-inflammatories before the gym. This is counterproductive, okay? Because you want inflammation when you're working out. You know, you want the pumps. You want that blood flow into your muscle. When you take painkillers, anti-inflammatories, you actually prevent that. So it makes absolutely no sense to use any of these cheats, whether it be anti-inflammatories, Tylenol, Advil, whatever, painkillers, and then any of these accessories, okay? So just think about it. Think of what I'm saying. A lot of you are so defensive about this. If you tell a guy, you go up to a guy in the gym, you're like, oh, wearing a belt is stupid. You know, he's going to get defensive and pissed. Wow, this guy's a fucking asshole. He's being rude to me. You are being rude. You are being an asshole. But if you calmly, you know, if I had a guy come up to me, I was benching a lot. I was squatting a lot. And he came up to me in the gym, and he asked me, he's like, you know, why don't you wear a belt? He was a younger guy. I didn't tell him, oh, belts are gay, belts are this, belts are that, belts are for pussies. You know, I didn't say that. That's what idiots say, okay? Only a fucking buffoon would answer it that way. I calmly explained to him exactly what I'm explaining to you, that it doesn't help your core, it's a crutch, it's not helping you improve, and it's counterproductive. And I explained why, and I explained exactly the way Matt and I are explaining it, calmly, and he thought about it, and he's like, you know what, you're right. He thought about it. Now, maybe he didn't stop wearing a belt, but maybe he started thinking about it, and he started thinking, well, you know what? This guy has a point. So those of you out there who go around the gym wearing a belt and always are wearing gloves and straps and belt, I mean, you go to like a LA Fitness franchise gym in any suburban LA Fitness, half the guys in there are wearing gloves. I mean, it's pathetic, you know, but like, they don't understand that they're actually hurting themselves in the process. You're hurting yourself.
I think one thing to do, if you are the guy that uses gloves or straps to lift, like say for your deadlifts and that kind of thing, and you've listened to this and you thought, you know what, I'm gonna ditch them. I'm gonna go back to raw. You might want to add in a couple exercises and maybe train your forearms directly. I don't train forearms directly. I've never had to, but I think in that case, it might be a good idea. You might be able to build some of that strength up quicker. So you could do, you know, your typical forearm curls, or what you could even do is when you're doing a barbell curl, just go with a reverse grip, and that puts a little more pressure onto your forearms. So just do that little bit of training. It'll help you get that built back up quicker. It won't take long because you're already in the gym, you're lifting, your body knows what to do. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, Steve touched on the anti-inflammatories and that kind of thing. When you go to the gym and you lift weights, in the most basic sense, you're tearing your muscle down, and then your body says, well, shit, you know, we're tearing this down. We better build it bigger and stronger so that when he does it again, it's not going to tear. Right, that's the idea. This is how the whole process works. And as long as you're giving your body enough nutrients to make that repair and you're resting, you know, your body will make that repair. So that's why you don't want to block that from happening. By taking, you know, a Tylenol or an Advil before you go to the gym, your body's not going to get that signal because it's not going to realize that it needs to repair. It's going to think, oh, no, we feel fine. Everything's good. So you don't want to hinder that. Okay, it's very, very old school that guys used to take aspirin, and it was for a different purpose. So if you do hear guys doing that and they're like 70, it's not something we do anymore. Thinking's changed in that regard.
This segues into another question we got asked, Matt. You must have saw these questions ahead of time. But next question was a guy. He said he's getting older. He's approaching 35. And he wants to know about injuries to look for and how to avoid them. And this is a really good topic that we don't really talk about enough in weight training. It's not just weight training, though. It's general life. When you combine general life with weight training, in my case, my rotator cuff tear, my rotator cuff actually tore most was when the last move I made last year, I was moving a heavy fucking desk with one other guy. This desk required probably 4 or 5 guys to move, but I was moving a desk down the stairs, and instead of taking the desk apart, you know, we didn't want to waste our time, so we just fucking carried the desk down the stairs. But in a normal situation, you take the desk apart, or you get like 4 or 5 guys to move this desk. So we're moving the desk, and I felt the tear the next, for like 4 or 5 days. I couldn't even raise my hand above my head. So that was where it tore. But the initial damage was through weight training. But then real life scenarios, you have car accidents that can cause neck and back problems, which I've had as well. And that in weight training, desk jobs can cause neck problems. So all these injuries that we get in real life can be exacerbated through weight training, and vice versa, weight training injuries can be exacerbated through real life. If you're a person who drives a lot, you know, you're basically putting a lot of pressure on your neck and back, and you know, and that can actually cause injuries later in life, lots of disc problems and stuff. So anyway, getting back to weight training, this is why painkillers are stupid as well. Piggybacking off of what Matt said, and I just want to say this. When we lift weights, lactic acid starts building up into muscles. When you feel that burn, that's that lactic acid moving into the muscle. That's part of the reason you feel that nice burn. And a lot of people think lactic acid, oh my God, lactic acid is a bad thing. We have to flush out our lactic acid. They used to think that back in like the 70s, 80s, maybe the 90s, I don't know. But science has proved that that's false. Lactic acid is a good thing. Lactic acid is needed to basically grow muscle. And the soreness you get after you lift weights is not lactic acid. It's amazing how many 20-year-olds keep saying that. If you go to a gym and you talk about soreness, you'll have some 20-year-old interject, oh yeah, it's lactic acid. You know, it's amazing how these stupid fucking theories get passed down. It's not lactic acid. All it takes is a Google search to show you that it's not lactic acid that causes soreness. What causes soreness is you're breaking up your muscle fibers. They're destroyed, and then you got that inflammation going in there to trying to repair them. That's why you feel soreness. Lactic acid is not even in your body a day or two later. Maybe a little bit, but it's not even in your body, in your muscles, a day or two later. So the way we fix these, the way we recover from workouts is proper nutrition, okay, not overtraining, and the big one, okay, this is the big one, sleep. If you're not sleeping, you're not repairing your body. You're not repairing these small micro injuries that you're sustaining, because to get recovered properly and repair these cellular injuries at a cellular level, you must reach stage 3 or stage 4 of sleep minimum. If you're only a light sleeper, you're only getting stage 1, stage 2 sleep because you're abusing caffeine, you're not sleeping soundly, your wife is snoring, your husband is snoring, whatever, and you can't sleep, your mattress is shit, your pillow is shit, you're never going to reach stage 3, stage 4 sleep enough at night to really start that repair process. And so if you're not getting, you need to figure out how to fix your sleep. And in our next podcast, we're actually going to talk about sleep, because it's so fucking important, and so many fucking people have sleep problems, especially Matt and I's age group and the younger age group don't understand how to sleep, and a big reason for that is all the technology. Well, we'll get into that in the next show. We'll save it. You know, Matt, can you tell us a little bit about injuries to look for and how to avoid them?
Yeah, the first one I want to point out, I'm going to give you guys a little homework here. This is what I want you to do. Next time you go to your doctor, just ask him or her a very general question. Say, what have you seen change with neck injuries over the past 5 to 10 years? And listen to what they tell you. They'll want to go on and on and on. And you know what it has to do with? It has to do with technology. How many of you listening to this podcast right now are looking down at an electronic device? You're looking down at your phone. You're looking down at your iPad. I bet you it's a big number. Okay? We're not meant to look down. Human bodies, we've not evolved to where we're supposed to be looking down all the time. That puts an incredible amount of stress on your neck, a lot more than you think. I want to say it's like 10 to 20 pounds worth of pressure sitting on top of your head every time you're sitting there looking down. So ask your doctor about that and see what they say. You'll be amazed. They'll want to go on and on about it. So you take that. A lot of you guys are younger, right, in your 20s, listening to this podcast. So you take that, the amount of time you're looking down and putting that stress on your neck, and then you carry into that what you're doing at the gym, okay? It's really, really easy to injure your neck, okay? That's the first area that you really want to watch out for. Second one is the shoulders, and I'll tell you why. When you're doing your push day, say you're doing the chest and triceps, when you're bench pressing, you're putting a lot of pressure on your shoulders. Then the next day, say it's your back day. Well, guess what? When you're doing all your pulling exercises, you're putting a lot of pressure on your shoulders again. And then, don't forget, you're going to have a day at the gym where you're probably working out shoulders directly. So now all of a sudden you're doing your militaries and your lateral raises. And then again, so three out of your, you know, however many you do, four or five workouts a week, you're putting an extreme amount of pressure on your shoulders. Okay, so that's one. When you do get that minor pain, be very careful. Like, really pay attention to it and learn. You have to learn to listen to your body, because you really need to know the difference between soreness and injury, especially with something like your shoulders. If it's just a little soreness and you kind of, you know what that feels like, rest a day. Okay, don't be afraid to take a day off the gym. It's not a big deal. You're not going to lose all your muscles. Okay, if it's something different that you haven't felt, take longer. Okay, make sure you know what's going on. Don't be afraid to go get it looked at. Don't be afraid to do a deload week at the gym, you know, where you're going extremely lightweight on everything you do. That's fine. Okay, that'll help you with your form. It'll let your body repair a little better. You're not going to cause any further damage if there is, you know, something minor going on. So use these tools to avoid, you know, further injury. And the number one thing you can do is listen to your body. It's okay to take off 2 days in a row, 3 days in a row at the gym if something's not feeling right. It's much better. You always have to treat this as a long-term thing, okay? Would you rather be out of the gym for a week and, you know, get yourself better, or would you rather be out of the gym for a year because now you've had to have surgery, you know, because you fucked up? So that's part of it. The other thing is getting enough protein helps, okay? It helps with recovery. So if you're tearing this muscle down, right, like we talked about, if your body wants to rebuild it, it needs that protein, because that's the building blocks of muscle. That's what's going to, you know, help actually build the muscle. So that'll obviously help as well. So if you're eating enough protein, getting the right stuff in, and it's just soreness, it's going to go away in a couple of days. It's when you start feeling something, you know, for 4 and 5 days that you know, yeah, that's probably not just soreness. I might want to take today off the gym and, you know, see how it goes. And, you know, a couple days later, yeah, you know what, it's still there. I should probably go to the doctor, have this thing looked at. Steve, give us a recommendation, because I know some people say, oh, you know, maybe I should just go to the chiropractor, or, you know, I'll just find any old therapist. But I know you're pretty passionate about this topic.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of doctors, they don't deal with athletes, guys. A lot of doctors, they're dealing with old people. A lot of physical therapists are dealing with old people. You really need to do your research and find a good physical therapist that deals with athletes. There's a difference. If you walk in there and the physical therapist is clowning around, you know, they're just working with these 70-year-olds. They're doing some fucking cookie-cutter program. These chiropractors are notorious for this. They'll put you on a cookie cutter program. You'll go in there, it'll crack your back. Then they'll you know, you'll do a little physical therapy there. It's just some cookie cutter crap. It's not going to help you. Then they'll get you going once a week. Then they'll get you going once every 2 weeks. It's a typical cookie cutter crap. It's not helping you. Cracking your back and cracking your neck does not heal injuries, okay? You need to find a good quality physical therapist, not one that makes $12 an hour. Okay, you need to find one that has a fucking, like, very well educated and that deals with athletes. And, you know, that's what you need to do. Go to them a few times. You don't have to keep going to them, but go to them a few times. Have them show you some techniques that you can incorporate yourself at the gym, and then start using those at the gym. The best decision I ever made in the past year was getting a stand-up desk. And I wish I'd got one sooner, because I do a lot of work. You know, I have a desk job. So I got rid of my sitting down in front of the computer, and now I have a stand-up desk. So I stand up now in front of the computer. Not only have I, you know, does it burn more calories, but it also prevents more damage to your neck and back. Because, you know, you start getting these degenerative discs from sitting down all the time. You round in your shoulders. It's a disaster. Unfortunately, the damage is done with me. I can never reverse the damage I've already made, but I can prevent future damage. So if you do have a desk job, I highly recommend getting a stand-up desk. You can basically take it to work with you and just put it on your existing desk. And then put your computer on top, and boom. Now you'll be standing up. Get a mat to stand on, you know, and this way your feet are comfortable. So those are my best advice, guys. And we'll get into this more as our as our podcast continues. So, I mean, we have a few minutes left. I really want to get to this question because I always want to add a relationship question to our podcast. We had one. He wants to ask his girlfriend to get married, and he wants Matt's advice on where he should ask her, how he should ask her, and even with a wedding ring. How expensive a wedding ring should he get her? He's worried that if he doesn't get her an expensive wedding ring, she might get, like, pissed off. So, Matt, can you tell us a little bit about your experience? Because you are married, and tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so women will make it very easy for you when you learn to listen. Okay, like, as men, we're terrible at listening, but they really will help you. So next time you're around and you're shopping, okay, I'm assuming you guys have probably even talked about it, that it's a possibility at some point. So when you're out at the mall, you buy the jewelry store, pay attention because she's going to point out the one she likes. It's really, really easy, okay? They want to feel like princesses. They want you to, you know, get exactly what they want. So I guess, you know, money's a touchy thing because you only have a certain budget, right? Long term, a woman's going to be much more happy with a guy that's financially stable versus somebody that blew all their money on one ring and now they can't afford to eat, right? So I would say it's more important on the style versus the amount of money. Okay, you can spend, you know, a couple grand and get something really, really, really nice. So just pay attention. You don't want to get a circle diamond if she wants a square, right? Things like that. So she'll tell you, though. This is what I mean. If you just listen, she'll tell you. As far as where to do it, I'm a big fan of, you know, make it something that she likes and make it something, you know, kind of like an event. Plan it out. Make it something important because, like I said, she wants to feel like a princess, like the center of attention. Like that's just how they're wired, right? So make it all about her. Don't just get her a ring and then, you know, you're at home and say, hey, you know, by the way, you want to get married. Like that's not going to work. Okay. I'm a big fan of going old school, and talking to the father first, if that's something you know, you're able to do, if he's around in that, that stuff matters in the end because you only get to do this once. So you want it to really be something important that, you know, she can look back on and she can tell her friends like, hey, look what he did. You know, and then you look like the hero, right? You did it all right. Just personally, I'm a big fan of outdoors. So something like a big garden where you walk around, a butterfly place, things like that, you know, get outside, get away from technology, get away from, you know, your house. You can even, if there's somewhere that she likes, you know, she's a big fan of, go there for the weekend, you know, just do a couple day trip and find somewhere there that you can do it. Just something to make it special, I guess, is the biggest point. And most importantly, make sure that it's the right decision. You know, I'm a firm believer that, you know, you should only do this one time. You should be sure that it's the right time. And if it doesn't work out, well, then, you know, you blew it. So,
okay, shit happens. I mean, we all know shit happens. Do you, did you get a prenup? I know prenups now cost about $1,500 per person. The way it works is you get a prenup from your lawyer, then, you know, that lawyer sends it to her lawyer. You each pay $1,500. You come up with a fair agreement, you know, and stuff. And a lot of people feel like, oh, you know, that's negative, you know, that's, but I'm saying shit happens, you know, 5 years or 10 years from now, one person could, you know, have an affair or something. So you want to basically be able to kind of like get out of it, like with minimal hurt either way. What do you think about that?
I think where that works is if either person is wealthy beforehand, or if you're like, say it's a woman who has a important last name, like she's a lawyer and that's part of the law firm or something like that. Those times I think it's okay. For me, I was younger, like I didn't really have anything at that time that I was worried about. So to me, I looked at it as there's no reason. And yeah, it seems kind of you know, why get married and get one of these? But I think it has its place if you have a lot before you decide to get together.
You can do a post-nup as well. So after you get married, you can decide to get one too. But the way the prenups are arranged, it's not like in soap operas and movies. Because I was engaged myself and we were looking into it. And, you know, I was kind of like, I was like, look, we should probably do this. Because, it's $1,500 per person to go to a lawyer. You go to your lawyer, I go to my lawyer. We come up with a fair agreement. This way, if something were to happen, and it kind of gives us like peace of mind where, if we don't want to be with each other 5, 10, 15 years from now, you know, it gives us an easy out. This is something that we could, you know, get out of the, you know, marriage. And this way, it basically doesn't mean we have to stay together if we don't want to be together. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Matt. You should wait. And it's kind of, you know, too many people, they just rush into marriage because it's what society tells them to do. And that's not correct. You really need to be patient and wait for the right person to come along. And, you know, and usually, you know, as you get older, you start figuring out what you really want. Because if you're in your 20s, you know, what you want in your 20s is not necessarily what you want in your 30s or 40s. So things can change. But that doesn't mean if you get married young and still not have a successful marriage. So, but, you know, we do know from divorce rates, people who get married in their teens, the divorce rate is like over 70%, and then in their 20s, it's in the 60s, 30s, it's in the 50s, 40s, it's in the 40s. As you get older, the divorce rate actually starts dropping, and, you know, there's different factors for that, but, you know, so, all right, I mean, is there anything else you can give to this guy?
No, I think as long as he's sure, it'll work out. You just be sure that it's the right decision in your heart.
All right, great, guys. So, sorry we ran out of time, guys. That hour flew by, but we'll be back for another podcast next week. We appreciate you listening to evolutionary.org raw podcast, and we will talk to you guys next time.